Yep. All righty, here we go. All right, everybody. Tom and Curly Show's back. Get back to your seat. Let's get going. Oh, I think Hannah Scott's going to come in. Diving in the door! All righty. I'm just glad Dougie and the Axeman and Wayne and the rest of the gang that sit in that garage there, Tom, right off of Buck Lane and Cleveland, can't get the show.
And why can't they?
I don't know. I try to get it on the phone. You can't get it.
Wow.
I mean, you can get it. I just didn't show them how to get it.
Right.
You know, hold some things back. All right, let's get Hannah in here. Lots of news. How about Hannah asking the trenchant question? Good for you, Hannah, making us all proud of the press conference. Good for you.
By
the rest of those saps that are sitting there not asking really hard questions of the governor, but you, on the other hand, you're doing all gently grilling the salmon. You pick them up and you flip them over and you get brown them on each side. That's good. So let's see. Where do you want to start with? What you got a couple of good ones here. What do you want to do first?
I do. We are going to start with the new app, because there's an app for that, right?
Yeah.
I think we just heard a little bit of it in Heather's newscast. And yesterday, this is about, of course, the new technology that the state has launched to try to help keep track and notify people about the coronavirus and if they are in danger of possibly getting it. Yesterday, the governor was excited to announce the launch of that new program.
We now have a tool that we're going to be making available to Washingtonians to make sure that you know if you've been close to someone who's positive with the virus. So this is a tool that when you're out and about and you use your cell phone, your cell phone can effectively alert you if you've been in close proximity with someone who's tested positive. Feature, we're calling it WaNotify.
WaNotify. So made through Apple and Google and the University of Washington. If you have the Apple phones, you can go into your settings and just hit, enable it is what it's a little bit easier. And then you have to download it, I think, as an app in the Android's Google Play Store. Now, here's how it works.
Will alert people without ever having to share personal information. And this is the beauty of it. This is a program that will alert you if you come in close proximity to somebody who's positive without ever having to share your personal private information. So let's just talk about how this works. Let's say you're out in public and you spent time near someone who at some point is positive for the virus. When two people using WaNotify are near each other, their phones exchange random codes using Bluetooth technology. That means this is anonymous, and it does not involve location tracking. If one of those people later tests positive for COVID-19 and they enter a verification code from public health officers into WaNotify, anyone with WaNotify who is near that person during their infectious period will get a notification they may have exposed to COVID.
Okay, fine.
So, like that. Now, here is why they want all of us to sign up for it.
Data suggests, models suggest that even a small number of people who use WaNotify in King, Pearson, Snohomish counties alone would reduce infections by up to 11% and deaths by up to 15%.
So
is he doing this press conference from the trunk of a car? This sounds like Miller's Crossing, where the guy was back there, and then they opened the door, and then I think it was Joe Pesci beat him with a softball bat to death or something. Is he double masking up, or why does the governor sound even more distant and somewhat disconnected from reality?
I feel like that might be my technology. I'm not 100%, because I don't remember. I was thinking, I don't remember him sounding like this yesterday, so it might be my fault. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But you understood what he said, though, right?
I got it. So they're going to turn it over to technology. How are they doing with their contact tracing?
Yeah, not awesome. So this was brought to my attention yesterday. Essentially, the state has these goals that they want to reach. It's every positive test they get, they want to reach 90% of those people within that first 24 hours.
Right.
And talk to them and start the contact tracing process. And they said when they launched this in their various reports that they have online that it was not that, you know, they weren't going to meet the goal right out of the gate, and they didn't. But it's been up and running, and they do these weekly reports. In, mid-October, it was about 84%, I believe they were reaching. And then a couple of weeks later, it dropped to 60, 70%. The last week that they reported on, which is the middle of April, I think it's the 8th to the 14th, dropped all the way, I'm sorry, the middle of November, all the way down to 6%, 6% from 84% to 6% that they're reaching on day one. And also there's a, it talks just about how many they're actually reaching out to, not how many they actually reach is another goal that they look at. And that too is somewhere in the 70, 80%. And they're only doing it like 5% of the time for that particular week. I asked the state health secretary about this yesterday and whether there was any concern about this leading to more spread of the virus. And here's what he said.
So part of the, I have not actually looked at the report yet myself. The challenges that we've been receiving certainly are within that 24-hour report of being able to actually contact folks. This is the piece where we need folks who are willing to answer phones and be able to return our calls. We continue to work, as the governor said, in hiring folks. I know that some of our local health departments are also feeling the strains of this and continue to do our best to get a hold of people as quickly as we can once we get those results.
6%.
They're working on it.
This is Todd Meyer's work, right? Didn't Todd dig through all this and find this story from Washington Policy Center?
He did. He goes through all of the reports. He loves the numbers. And
he does.
Brought it to my attention and I think your attention. And I was surprised to see the numbers. But so there's a couple of, to put some this in context, the first week in this report is the middle of October, where there was a total of 485 cases of that were reported for the particular the level that they're looking at, the day that they're looking at. And that moved up to 2,787. So there was a dramatic increase in the number of positive cases. And I think they just don't have the staff for that. They had had the National Guard working with them for a while. Then they stopped. I think they are doing that again. They're in the midst of hiring, I want to say it was 350 or so people that they're bringing on to do this contact tracing work. But it sounds to me like, just looking at the numbers, they don't have the staff to do what they need to do.
I asked Todd about that this afternoon, and he told me, well, he goes, even in the before they had tremendous amount of cases, they were contacting about 234 people a day. They're now contacting 134 people a day, or something like that. So the number, even the number of contacts that they're making per day, has decreased. So I guess they're increasing the number of people, but not contacting or something. But again, the goal was 90%. They've hit 6%. And this is your government working hard in order to be able to contact trace.
Okay, but John, then your government was working hard in the beginning when it had 84%. I guess the question I would have is, are the people, is there more and more resistance now to sort of turning over their information than there used to be? If early on we didn't know what the heck we were dealing with, it was like a modern day plague and all this. I'm wondering if the contact tracers have found more and more resistance, like fewer and fewer people returning their calls or even picking up the phone because they just don't want to be dragged into this. I'm just wondering how many people think of this as a government plot and all that.
Well, I don't know how many think of it as a government plot. I know that they do absolutely have problems with, and I think you heard the Secretary Wiesman mention it there, that it's very important that they get people who call them back. But again, this report from this particular week shows that they didn't even actually make that effort to make that first call. Very much of the time, which is a concern. So, but yes, they do. I hear this from local health officials as well, that there are more people who do not answer. And it's not necessarily a plot. I think some of it has to do is with the recommendation that you have quarantine and people who are back at work don't necessarily want to. Yeah,
I get that.
They don't force them to quarantine, but they certainly, if they're all told to have to quarantine for 7 days, that's 7 days of work that you lose. And you simply don't want to be involved in it. So
is this app designed? Could the app solve some of these contract tracing problems? Is that the idea, that it alleviates some of that?
It's a couple of different things. A part of it, it can help with that contact tracing. If you sign up and you want to take part in the program, it can certainly alert you and make you know that you go get a test. It's not necessarily going to replace contact tracing. It's just, I think they said it was like an extra layer of effort in that area. Mm-hmm. But also, as those numbers that you heard him describe, Governor Inslee, that is that if just 15% of people sign up for this app in Pierce, King, and Snohomish counties, yeah. their numbers, their modeling says that's going to lead to 11% fewer infections, 15% fewer deaths. Yeah. So that means, you know, that's good.
Yeah, these are projected, right? These are projected cases?
Modeling. Yeah, modeling,
right. Okay, so we know how well they do with that. Overall, how are we doing with, because Tom, cases don't mean anything. Cases mean nothing.
John,
cases
mean nothing. The same argument. I'm not going to get into that.
Because you're not able to support your side. I can with facts. You are able to present the idea that the government is right. No, Tom.
There is a correlation between the number of cases and deaths.
Ultimately,
and hospitalizations.
Right. Let's talk about that. So, Hannah, how are we doing in the ICU? Are we overrun at this point?
We are not overrun yet, but we are getting full. And I'll tell you the latest health official I heard from today was in Snohomish County, uh-huh. where they have, he gives the same update every week. They had a 20% increase in cases. They have a significant increase in hospitalizations and a significant increase in their ICU bed usage. He sounded more concerned than he did the week before, which tends to be the trend with him, but they are seeing those significant numbers. Hospitalizations are going up. 136 new hospitalizations in the last 24 hours statewide.
So the question is that back in May, when we had the two additional hospitals that were built, saw absolutely no patients, total amount was 450 possible beds, all of them remained empty. And we had at the top, it was at April 17th or right in there, 634 people were in the ICU. So if it's going up, and right now 34% of ICU has COVID in there, why don't they bring those hospital beds back? Rather than possibly shutting down and continue to destroy lives, why not rebuild the beds again if we are up above, and I think we are above the height of where we were in April?
We are either right at that level or right above it. Yeah.
Right.
And the reason is because the federal government paid for that. My guess. The big tent that we had, the CenturyLink field facility that they've set up that we never used, that was all the result of assistance from FEMA and the federal government. And that's not happening right now.
But why? We have $1.8 billion in revenue that hasn't been used. Why wouldn't the governor leading this state, why not take the money that he has and put that towards building hospital beds? If that's the infrastructure problem, and that was the lie that we were told back in March, was to flatten the curve. Now, what will he possibly do? Will he continue to shut down again? Will he tell people that are kids that are playing soccer to wear a mask in the rain, even though that's completely ineffectual, to be able to stop COVID? Or will he build beds, put beds back in place to take care of the overflow?
I don't think you're going to see him build anything. I mean, it's just not something that's going to happen. I don't even hear that that's anything that would come up in the legislature when the session starts. I think that you will continue to hear him say that the federal government needs to help. I think he expects some of that help will come when Joe Biden transitions to the president. And I think that he really counts on all of us doing our part to not get to that ICU
that's
level.
Right.
We are still better than most other states. Gavin Newsom in California just said yesterday he's going to, he either did or he's about to, again, go to full lockdown because they're not listing and they have too many cases a day. And there are other states that are doing that.
Like,
we aren't there yet.
Right. Like Peru, like Spain, like the UK, all did huge lockdowns and the numbers continue to spike. So the question is...
No, in Britain, it just worked. They just did it for a month and they say, yeah, they dropped it by like 35%. So now they're thinking they're going to open up for Christmas.
No, they're doing
lockdowns on a temporary basis actually do work.
I don't know where you're getting that, Tom. The tier thing is what they're thinking of doing again, which would be more lockdowns in the UK. I'm talking about severe lockdowns like Peru did, severe lockdowns like Belgium did. The severe lockdowns don't work. As the CDC has pointed out, lockdowns don't stop the COVID. We have had it, and you see it in California. They're going to lock it down even more. My point is this. Why doesn't the governor, I'll finish and then you can interrupt me. Why doesn't the governor take care of the infrastructure, which is the ICU beds, which he keeps telling us about? They just wag the finger. You don't. You better wear a mask. You better keep apart. You better not do Thanksgiving together. Build a ICU bed, Tom. If that's the big problem that we have, we had 400 before. We didn't use any of them. But as the numbers spike, get the beds in place.
Those beds were there for recovery. They weren't there. They weren't doing the heavy ventilations business in those tents. Those were for recovery, and all the people that had to be displaced and didn't have their cancer surgery or all these kinds of things, those were the ones that were impacted. We don't want to have to do that again. So rather than building, like in China, building an entire hospital with that kind of infrastructure, it's just if people would stop traveling and stop wearing masks,
really?
They could bring it down themselves. Yep. And that's the idea. And I think you'd like it because it'd be cheaper. It wouldn't cost taxpayers money that you're always so worried about.
Yeah. And the other point I'll make is that I don't know the exact answer as to why not. There are a variety of other spending needs I know at this point. What I will tell you is that even if he did build more capacity, there is no one to work there. There's not enough staff to expand that.
Okay. By the way, I just heard from Todd, who did the work on the COVID contact calamity. He said the
is
state,
he checking up on me?
Yeah, he just said the state is only trying to contact 11%, so it isn't about the people rejecting. They've dropped down to 11%. That's
I know, but why? See, the problem with Todd's article is he says, well, we have the resources, but there's not enough staffing. Well, I don't understand who's making that decision to not staff it up.
It's
that's
not
what
Todd.
He needs to address.
It's not Todd.
But they are in the middle of bringing on 350 more workers to do this contact tracing that is currently happening right now. So presumably these numbers would get better. We'll keep an eye on it.
Okay. And we'll continue to be scolded by the governor telling us that. Is he eventually going to threaten us with more
John
lockdowns?
Or John Curley. You're more of a scold than Jay Inslee is, John.
Yeah. No.
You can understand me because I don't have a mask on my face. Will he continue to scold us? Will he possibly do lockdowns, killing more people?
It's possible. Look, if we see a huge surge on top of a surge, as Anthony Fauci said on Sunday, if we see that 2 weeks after Thanksgiving and the hospitals are overrun, the ICU beds are gone. You bet. I think there'll be more lockdowns. Will he lift the current situation on December 14th? He's not saying yet. I think probably not. We've got the holidays, people traveling, and cases going up. Right now, all eyes are going to be on what happens with cases in the next week or so.
All right. Thank you, Hannah. Appreciate it.
You bet.
There she goes out the door. We never got to the insurance question. We'll have to take that with her tomorrow, and I'll scream at her about that. Not at her. With her. All right. All righty, thank you, Tom. No, we'll do it later, Rachel. I mean, Rachel's not here yet. Mokashuka Casino, the biggest and best in the Northwest. You know, it's great, Tom. You have not been in here in a long time. That monitor has been askew and tilted to the side. It never got fixed, and I thought it was my eyeball. It's not. Rachel's coming in now. You should see place. We have all this plexiglass all around us. Here she comes.
The plexiglass is so fun.
It is. Rachel and I play I'm in prison, talk to me.
Yeah.
Where we both put our hands up against the plexiglass, Tom. You know, those scenes in the movies where the guys...
Yeah, then you moving. Pick up the phone.
Yeah,
pick up the phone.
And we do that.
We do the phone and we do that. While you're talking about the people at Cairo 7 on our side, Rachel and I are sketching each other's faces
onto
the plexiglass.
It's really fun and politically correct.
By the way, we've never established who is in prison.
I was wondering that.
Me too.
Well, I was thinking with traditional kind of stereotypical gender roles, me.
Well, I had this look on my face like I was very sympathetic to you, so I was giving you the idea that you were the one that was behind bars. But that's not why you're here.
It's
Rachel,
not,
you've come... No, you're talking about finally we're going to get a chance to be a lot like Scotland.
Oh, I was going to do this other one first to make sure we got to it, though. Change of plans, bud. Hold on, just real fast. So remember a few weeks ago, everybody was very excited about the Bidens bringing a dog back into the White House because the Trump family doesn't have, have a pet. And so people really like a presidential pet. And people were really excited because it's going to be the first time there's a rescue dog in the White House.
Yeah.
But I had no interest in that. I was saying, dogs, enough of the dogs. Right. What about a cat in the White House? And using America's favorite pet website, thenoseprint.com, I told the audience all about, cats in the White House, how President Abraham Lincoln was the first to bring one in, yada, yada, yada. Uh-huh. Well, clearly the White House has heard my pleas because it was announced just yesterday the Bidens are going to get a cat when they move in the White House. CBS confirms, which I'll tell you, it doesn't sound like much of a confirmation. So Jill, just call her Jill. Yeah. Jill Biden did an interview with CBS Sunday Morning and said, quote, "Well, I'd love to get a cat. I love having animals around the house." And then CBS Sunday Morning said, "Breaking news, it is confirmed that the Bidens are bringing a cat into the White House."
Well, perhaps the cat won't break the president's leg.
Yeah, it could happen, though. I've tripped over my cat a couple of times.
Yeah, did you break a bone and have to go to the hospital and get a walking boot?
No, but I'm not 78.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No offense, but...
That's what happens when you're old. All right.
I drink a lot of milk, too.
Right, got it.
I don't have brittle bones.
So the cat's going to be roaming around the White House.
That's what I was thinking, like, the White House is so big. How would you ever find your cat? Cats love to find a little cozy nook. I think they would have to have a wing for this cat. Otherwise, it might, you know, what if it, like, pees in Lincoln's hat or something? Or like George Washington's wooden tooth.
Tom, feel
what
free to
what if it eats
jump.
George Washington's wooden tooth?
Feel free to come in here at any minute, Tom.
That's okay. I like watching drownings.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think that's going to be a problem. They'll have a Didn't Clinton or somebody else have a cat?
Oh, yeah. Carter his name was Socks.
Yeah, right. Socks the cat. Clinton had a cat. So it's not like it hasn't been done before. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right.
But now let's talk about Scotland.
Yes.
Okay?
Wow.
Yeah. And then, well, this show, I thought, I want to talk about Tom and John's two favorite things. We're going to talk about cats. We're going to talk about
tampons.
Yeah. And I like to talk about this kind of stuff on the radio because I think that it should be normalized. And I'm so tired of this, like, old school, you know, morning show guys being like, "Oh, gross. I'd never buy my girlfriend a pad." You know, it's like, okay, come on. It's 2020. So last week, Scotland became the first country in the world to provide pads and tampons for free in all public bathrooms. So that covers libraries and museums, government buildings, schools and universities. The easy way to think about it is it's treated like toilet paper. Mm. Every time you use a bathroom in public, there's toilet paper. And in Scotland, there will now be feminine hygiene products. But in the U.S., we are far from that. There's something called period poverty, and a lot of women can't afford these products, and there's a tax on them. People call it the pink tax. I just heard in our state, I think they finally just voted to get rid of the tax. But a professor of public health at St. Louis University, she did a study because she noticed there wasn't one that was already done, and she did it with 183 low-income women in St. Louis and found that 64% of them couldn't afford period products in the last year, and they couldn't use them. So she calls it an issue of dignity. In four states, California, New York, Georgia, and Virginia, it is now required that middle and high schools stock their bathrooms with them. And in New York, they found that attendance rates for girls rose by 2.4%. So what they're saying is there are times when women who can't afford the products will miss a job interview or miss a couple days of work, or a girl won't go to school because she doesn't have these products. So the article was saying, and this was in The Lily, which is a really great kind of feminist arm of The Washington Post. It was saying because of the way our country works, men vote against these laws all the time. You need to show facts and figures. And so that's why they're starting to collect this data to show actually it's better for productivity and you can make more money if we provide these products. That's the way we have to do it in our country to make it work.
They vote against it or... When it's brought up, is it brought up numerous times?
It has been brought up, yeah.
H.R. 143, the tampon free bill or something like that, and they say no.
They say no.
Or they include it in a bigger bill, and then the whole thing gets rejected.
I don't know, John. I'm just speaking out of my leg here. I don't know. I read one article.
Right.
But in Scotland, the highest government official is a woman, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, and in the article, they felt that that had something to do with the fact that this actually went through on a big level across the country.
John, I would guess, though, that there are probably more Republicans. The Republicans would be more against this than the Democrats, for starters. Do you not see that? Do you think, of course we ought to be doing this and you're all in favor of it?
Well, why Republicans against the Democrats?
Very anti-tampon Republicans.
Right, yeah.
Well, the thing is, they're anti-paying for something. They'll say, what do you mean you can't afford it? Then, you know, don't have another hot dog or something. I mean, the attitude is you spend the money on what you want.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh
wow. Okay,
is that why when I went to your house there weren't any hot dogs?
Yes, I bring your own hot dogs and I charge you, tax you for them.
B-Y-O-H-G.
Tom doesn't understand how tampons work. The hot dogs have nothing to do with it, Tom.
It'll be you now. I love my cat.
Who just said that?
I think it was the other me the past.
What'd they say again?
I love my cat.
Okay.
It's good when things get weird to play that because that's normal.
Okay.
I love my cat.
Okay, Tracy Taylor, please save us.
Weird. What the heck, man?
I don't know. All righty. Oh, more for the Facebook. How about that? Rachel and I goofing around with the plexiglass here. I'm sure Cairo is exactly what he wanted you to do. Lean up against it and have your fellow employee trace your face with a magic marker. By the way, Treehouse and the great today, of course, being a Giving Tuesday. Don't forget about Giving Tuesday. You can join Cairo Radio and Treehouse for the 32nd year, Tom, Holiday Magic, benefiting youth and foster care statewide. And thanks to the children's author, Marissa Meyer, for the first $20,000 donated to this year's Holiday Magic fundraiser will be matched. That's right. Donate and your gift will be doubled. You can text 98973 for a quick link to donate now. Texting 98973. For the quick link to donate. This is Holiday Magic. We used to do that live on the air. Remember, that was like the whole day thing? That was great fun. Great fun. Yeah, Cairo was involved with that. 32 years, and it is the foster care system, and you and I would be in there for our three-hour shift and the stories that would be told. That Treehouse is just one of these organizations just keeps going and going and going and going because of you and your donations and the lives that are changed. Foster care kids not dealt the best hand to start out in the world, but luckily foster care is there with your support. You can text and donate. Find out more about it. 98973. There we go. All right. Good for them. By the way, the Menstrual Equality for All Act, Tom, was H.R., as you know, 1882. That's H.R., House Bill 1882. It never made it out of committee.
Yes.
Yeah, nobody got a chance to vote on it.
It never goes. It
doesn't go anywhere.
Not enough support.
Well, just never goes anywhere.
They forgot to add a line about hot dogs.
That's what they did. They should have thrown that in there, and that would have made it all make more sense. Oscar-nominated Umbrella Academy. Haven't seen it. Do you know anything about that show? Is that on Netflix or something?
That's a Netflix show. No, I think that we will know who we're talking about if you've ever seen the movie Juno.
Okay.
She was the star of that show and got an Oscar nomination. And now Ellen Page has come out and announced that she is trans and goes by Elliot Page from here on in, which is it's one of the highest profile kind of Hollywood announcements I think there is. She's she was a great young actress, and now she's a he, and he's going, you know, everything in this article now is about, well, he starred in Juno, he starred in this. Elliot Page uses the pronouns he and they, and he says that he's, you know, very happy. He's found inspiration in the trans community. Ellen Page at the time, I think a year or two ago, came out as gay, and now Elliot Page says that he's transgender and non-binary, which means they don't identify with as either male or female.
Okay, and Page is married to a woman, right?
I don't know that much about her personal life. I wouldn't, you know.
Well, we obviously need to. She's coming out, or he's coming out as trans, so the personal life is, yes, married to a woman. So the question is always like, okay, so well, there's Tracy Taylor jumping in with her thing. All right.
I think the less that we talk about this topic, John, the better.
No, I always find it interesting. It's like, okay, so you are you attracted to women? Or if you're non-binary, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You're just attracted to people, and it doesn't matter what their sex organs are.
That's my understanding.
Okay. All right. Tracy Taylor?